If you have questions about God and faith and a sort of what we call apologetic questions, why we believe in God and who He is, one of the best books out there, in my opinion, is Letters from a Skeptic. Our men's group is just finishing up this Wednesday a series of studies where we've been reading that book together, Letters from a Skeptic. And what makes it really interesting, it's most apologetics, the answer to those kinds of questions, in my opinion, are just incredibly boring and hard to read. And, you know, with lots of facts and blah, 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 blah. Letters from a Skeptic consists of letters back and forth between Edward Boyd, who was in his 70s, and his son, Gregory Boyd, who was, I don't know, in his probably 40s. And they wrote back and forth. The old man, the dad, was a skeptic, was not a believer. And the son had become a believer and, in fact, was a seminary professor. And so it's very interesting to read the letters back and forth with dad asking his son questions. So it's a great little book to pick up. And it's very readable as well. And one of the entries, one of the letters that Edward Boyd writes to his son goes like this, just a little piece of it. He says, "Why does God put us in a position where we have to try to believe in Him? Why does He toy with mankind, teasing us with evidence that's good enough to make us uncomfortable, but never coming directly out and making Himself clear? What's so great about faith that He desires it above an obvious revelation of Himself?" His son, Gregory Boyd's answer, partly, is this: God is obvious enough to those who want to see Him. Those who want to see Him can see Him, but hidden enough so that those who don't want to see Him can avoid Him and be, in a sense, justified in their complaint about His secrecy. Love requires both evidence and hiddenness. The evidence is irrefutable, but not coercive. Love must be chosen, it must be free, and it must come from the heart without external motivation. Well, in this series of messages, I want to basically consider one question that we come back to for several weeks running here. And the question is, why should I love God? And I'm talking about loving God the way Jesus said to love Him. The love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul and all your mind kind of love. To love God and to be filled with His love, we must, I think, focus our minds on God in His glorious reality and remain fixed there. We must stop and smell the roses, so to speak, the title of this series. And I want to do that by reopening some of the marvelous gifts of God and focus on those gifts and let those gifts prompt us to raise our eyes to God and remember why we love Him. And last week, that first gift of God that we looked at, it was the gift of life that prompted us to give thanks and to remember our love for God, the giver of life. And today we open another gift, and I want us to open these gifts sort of with the anticipation of a child opening a Christmas present, squealing with delight at the sight of a gift he's always wanted, and then putting it down and running to his dad or his mom or whoever the giver is and throwing his arms around the giver and expressing appreciation and love. It's one of these gifts that Gregory Boyd is talking about when he says the evidence is irrefutable, but it's not coercive. It's a gift that reveals the presence and power of God to all who have eyes to see Him. And the gift I'm talking about is the gift of paradise, the gift of creation. So let's look at a couple of different passages today, beginning with Genesis chapter 2, verse 8, just one verse to kind of sum up the whole passage. And it says, "Now the Lord God had planted a garden in the east in Eden, and there He put the man He had formed." So this Genesis 2 is the story of paradise. It's a world described as a beautiful garden with all kinds of beautiful trees and plants, watered by four rivers flowing through Eden, with all kinds of animal life. Imagine the greatest possible beauty and majesty you've ever seen in nature, and maybe you get a glimpse of this paradise. You see, God's intent was for mankind to live in an Eden-like paradise. And the truth is that although the fall of man, the sin of man, has kind of marred this paradise, creation retains a great deal of paradise. The Apostle Paul writes about the impact that the natural world, God's creation, should have on us. And that's our main passage for today. So Romans chapter 1, verses 18 through 20. The Apostle Paul writes, "The wrath of God is being revealed from heaven against all the godlessness and wickedness of men who suppress the truth by their wickedness. Since what may be known about God is plain to them, because God has made it plain to them. For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, His eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood from what He has made, so that men are without excuse." Now, the very first word in the Greek text is often the verb of the sentence. It's just a different way the two languages work. We rarely start a sentence with a verb in English, but in Greek, that was very often the way it was or is. And so the first word in the Greek text is this word apokalupto, which translated means revealed. It's the word that we get the English word apocalypse now. It means to be something to be disclosed, or it can also be translated revelation. It is in the present tense, which communicates an ongoing revelation of God through all that He has made. You see, the book of Romans, or the letter of Romans, is Paul's like theological exposition of the gospel. He's going to explain how it all works. So if you've got some confusion about Christianity, Romans is a great place to go and read and learn. And Paul begins with revelation, apokalupto. How can anyone even know there is a God? Or know anything about God unless God takes the initiative to reveal Himself? And Paul contends that God has indeed taken the initiative. But faith remains a key part of the equation. God's self-revelation in creation is intended to give us clear evidence that He exists and that He is powerful. It's meant to inspire hope. It's meant to inspire love for the Creator. Paul puts great emphasis on faith. He writes in verse 17, the verse just before, "It is faith from first to last, but it is faith inspired by revelation." Well, what is it that's revealed exactly in this text? Well, it's God's wrath. God's wrath is revealed against the ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth. God's wrath is aroused by those who suppress the truth that there is a Creator. That all that we see in all of creation is not some crazy accident. And that we can know the Creator through Christ, which is to come in the rest of the book of Romans. You know, it's not enough for some to be atheists, to blindly refuse to acknowledge God. Some are so committed to this idea of atheism that they have to justify themselves and kind of become evangelists for atheism. And we see that quite often. A number of books have come out recently, not just defending a person's stance, but attacking anyone so foolish as to believe there's a Creator behind creation. They write books and produce film documentaries attacking faith, suppressing the truth of God. Jesus had something to say about people who purposefully try to undermine the faith of others. Matthew 18, 6, he says, and this is when little children came to him, and he said, whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me to stumble, it's better for him that a heavy millstone be hung around his neck and that he be drowned in the depths of the sea. That's pretty strong. And yet people like Christopher Hitchens says, I'm an atheist. I'm not neutral about religion. I'm hostile to it. I think it is a positively bad idea, not just a false one. Not just organized religion, but religious belief itself. And what he is doing, and many others, is to gamble everything on his faith that the universe is some unexplainable accident. And he desperately wants others to join him in that crazy gamble. Now, if you want more information about that kind of stuff, which really I'm working toward my main point today, and that's not it. There is a very interesting documentary out by Ben Stein. In fact, I wanted to show you a clip from it today, but too many clips don't work, and I've got a different one I'm going to use. It's called Expelled, and it's about really freedom in academia for people, for scientists specifically, to present the idea or to consider the idea of a creator behind creation, of intelligent design, it's called. Now, whether you agree with that idea or not is not his main point. His main point is just there should be academic freedom. And it's a very well-done documentary, and I highly recommend it. And at the end of that, he's got a striking interview with one of the authors, with the author of The God Delusion. And it's just a fascinating work. But back to my point. Because Paul, in this passage, points out the marvelous gift of God revealing himself through creation. And that's the gift we want to open up today. He says that it's obvious to anybody who's got eyes to see that God is real and that he has revealed himself through his creation, through what he's made. God does not demand blind, stupid faith based on no evidence whatsoever. That is not the God we worship or believe in. He asks for faith based on evidence. And part of that evidence is his handiwork. So here's my main question today. What's the appropriate response to creation? And I want to suggest a couple of things. First, very simply, appreciate the gift. You appreciate the gift. There's nothing worse, perhaps, at Christmas time than giving a gift and realizing it was the wrong gift and it's not going to be appreciated. I took two things back after Christmas. I mean, how many did you take back? Thanks, good try, but, not really that interested in that. I'll take it back. It's something. God gives us these gifts, and we need to enjoy them. We need to appreciate them. So, we need to appreciate the gift by first making time to enjoy nature. I've quoted several times recently because I just read the book, The Wilderness World of John Muir. John Muir traveled by foot mostly all over the United States, but he spent a great deal of time in California exploring the Sierra Nevada mountains. He went to Alaska. He wrote the little story about the little dog, Stickeen. He's a marvelous writer about nature. And when he was a boy, he grew up on a farm in Minnesota. And it was a very... His father was a religious man, but pretty harsh. And so he worked John Muir and his brothers very hard. And one job John Muir had, I mean, he's still a kid, it was digging a well. And they would lower him deeper and deeper into a well where he would dig. All day he would dig. And one time, he was lowered into the well in the morning, and as it got deeper and deeper, it produced some poisonous gas that in the bottom of the well. And he almost died from that experience. They lower him into the well, and he gets faint, and he can't hardly stand up. He doesn't know what's going on. And he barely maintained enough consciousness to hold on and be pulled back up when his brothers realized what was happening. And he writes about that. He makes a comparison. He says, "Once I was let down into a deep well into which choke damp had settled," as he calls it, "and nearly lost my life. The deeper I was immersed in the invisible poison, the less capable I became of willing measures of escape from it. And in just this condition are those who toil and dawdle or dissipate in crowded towns and the sinks of commerce or pleasure." You see what he's saying? He says, be careful. You can choke involved in commerce or pleasure in the towns. And he's saying you need to get out and enjoy the gift of God. Well, this past Thursday morning, I just read that recently. And so this Thursday morning, I came into the office, I sat down, had my coffee, and about 9 o'clock, I thought, you know, in preparing for this message about creation, I think I can justify getting out of the office today. So I told my secretary, I'm going home, and I'm going to go do some sermon work. So I went home, changed clothes, put on my hiking gear, which isn't too impressive, and I headed out to two places where I was going to go visit and walk alone and just pay attention to the beauty of God's creation. And the first place I went to was Wild Basin Wilderness Preserve on Loop 360. How many have been through that? I've driven past that 100 times, never stopped. Like, I bet that's cool. I'm busy. I'm choking in the choke damp. So I made a point, and I drove over there and took my water, my little backpack. And let's see, yeah, there's the sign, the Wild Basin and the trail there off into the hill country. Now, I'm no John Muir, who hiked throughout Alaska and California. But I hiked a couple of hours in the hill country, and I took my camera and my Bible and my journal, and I just walked, and I prayed, and I paid more attention to all of the rough beauty of the hill country. And here's a couple of slides that I took just for fun, just I don't even know what that is. That's the path that I went on. And then one more, I think. The little creek that you get to. And there was a little waterfall. And by then, I was so involved in the walk, I forgot to take any more pictures. So the way it's anyway. And then I drove from there after a few hours of hiking out in the hill country. I got in the car and I drove into Zilker Park because I remembered Zilker Botanical Gardens. I remember my parents taking me there when we first moved to Texas when I was about 10 years old and just how beautiful and wonderful it was. And so I went to walk it again for the first time in like forever. And I walked through the paths of this 31 acres of blooming plants and flowers and trees. And here's some things that just caught my attention, things that I was taking picture of. Yeah, just there's a little lizard on a rock and a bee, and wow, what a photographer I am, huh? The ones I didn't choose. Right? Yeah, okay. Well, is that all of them? Okay, good. Here's the point. There's all kinds of beauty all around us if we just take time to notice. A Harvard professor, biology professor, once returned to his classroom after summer vacation, and he told his students he had spent the entire summer traveling, and he made it halfway across his backyard. It just seems to me, this beautiful gift of creation, this wonderful gift, is something we must take time to enjoy. So, I want to give you permission, not that you need it. Go camping once in a while. Stay out over Sunday. Call in your church attendance so I can write it down. No, you don't have to do that. Once in a while. You know, I think Sunday is the Lord's day, and we should honor it as such. But occasionally, get your family, go out, and it's okay. And make it a spiritual experience as well as just a physical one. And talk about the good things that the Lord has created. Second, appreciate the gift. Make time to enjoy and be good caretakers. I think there's a lot of misunderstanding about what God means when he says some things in Genesis. And this is a separate sermon in itself, but I just want to touch on it. In Genesis 1:26, remember God said, "Let us make man in our image and our likeness. Let him rule over the fish of the sea," and so on, over all the earth. And then in Genesis 2:15, I think we get a little bit better understanding of what God meant by that when he says, the Lord God took the man and he put him in the Garden of Eden to work it and take care of it. We are to rule over creation in the sense of being partners with God in caring for creation. It's not here just to be used up. The world is a wonderful gift to be enjoyed and preserved, not just for future generations, although that's certainly a good thing, but to be preserved and cared for to the glory and honor of the Creator. So I think one response to creation is just appreciate it more. Enjoy the gift. God wants us to enjoy it. But then it leads us to the second thing. Remember to love the Creator. Some folks get stuck on the gift. A lot of people do. Some people make the gift God. They miss the point. Back to John Muir. As I said, he spent months exploring on foot the Sierra Nevada mountains in Yosemite in California in the 1880s. And he always kept a journal with him, and he recorded all kinds of stuff. And one thing he records is this discovery. He's camping out with some other people, but then he always went off on his own. And when he was off on his own, he discovered this fast-running stream with a little waterfall. And at the base of the waterfall was this enormous boulder in the middle of the stream. And so he was able to get out to the boulder and climb on the boulder. And, well, I want to read you what he writes about that, because he writes so beautifully. From The Wilderness World of John Muir. How soothingly restful, restfully cool it is beneath that leafy, translucent ceiling, and how delightful the water music, the deep bass tones of the fall, the clashing, ringing spray, an infinite variety of small, low tones of the current gliding past the side of the boulder island. All of this shut in, every one of these influences acting at short range, as if in a quiet room, the place seemed holy, where one might hope to see God. After dark, when the camp was at rest, I groped my way back to the altar boulder and passed the night on it. Above the water, beneath the leaves and stars, everything still more impressive than by day, the fall seen dimly white, singing nature's old love song with solemn enthusiasm, while the stars peering through the leaf roof seemed to join in the white water's song. Precious night, precious day to abide forever. Thanks be to God for this immortal gift. See, John Muir didn't just appreciate nature. He appreciated the Creator. This incredible gift of nature that we love, the majestic mountains, the mysterious rainforests, wind-blown deserts, the deep blue oceans teeming with life. The nature we experience in our backyard. It must serve to lift our heads so that we give thanks to the Creator. The timeless gift that can never be fully explored points to God. Do you love God, who gives such a precious gift? Romans 1, 19 and 20. I like the way Eugene Peterson translates it in The Message. He says, but the basic reality of God is plain enough. Open your eyes, and there it is. By taking a long and thoughtful look at what God has created, people have always been able to see what their eyes as such can't see. Eternal power, for instance, and the mystery of his divine being. So nobody has a good excuse. Well, if I were a school teacher, and I was long ago in a former life, I think, I would have planned a field trip today. I would have loved to have had a couple of buses pull up in front of the church, and we all load up and we go out to the Wild Wilderness Basin or to Zilker Gardens, and then we could all walk together through and see what God has done and experience firsthand nature, and then talk about how it inspires us to love God. No, I don't have any buses lined up. So I have an alternative to the field trip. And it's a very short little 5-minute video that I hope you will watch reverently, joyfully, and let it maybe inspire a little bit of the same response. So I want us just to quietly watch, listen, and reflect on the beauty and wonder of the gift of paradise, this paradise we call earth. And let it help you remember why you love God.